Are you seeking influencer status in your niche? Podcasting and publishing a book can build instant authority, as Gordon Glenister proved by gaining success in Brazil and at keynote conferences. Learn the insider ways he monetized through sponsors, networks, and memberships. Get insider secrets for leveraging the content you create to transform your podcast into a profitable business venture. Welcome to the Podcasting Secrets Show, where successful creators share their best stories, secrets, and strategies. I'm your host, Nathan Gwilliam. Hello, incurable creators. I'm Nathan Gwilliam, and I'm here today with Ryan Helms. Ryan is the owner of Legacy Podcasting and the Content Agency Collective. Ryan is an expert in podcast production and many other forms of content production. And today we're going to talk to him about creating content funnels. Thank you so much for joining us today, Ryan.
Glad to be here, Nathan. Hopefully I can provide some value to the audience.
Absolutely. I am certain you will. Can you start off by sharing with us your journey in podcasting and content production?
Yeah, I'll keep it short and sweet. 5 years ago, or probably 7 years ago, I started my own podcast, grew that to a couple hundred thousand downloads, then started an agency to help people do the same. Been running that. This month is 5 years running that agency, and we do all things podcasting, all the post-production activity, strategy, you name it, we handle it within the agency. And yeah, now also help people start content agencies themselves.
Can you tell us in that journey, what is the hardest thing, most challenging thing that you had to go through, and how did you get through it?
The most challenging piece of it, I guess it would be making the transition from, full-time corporate worker, doing content on the side to starting a content agency and making content like a full-time living. I'm very risk adverse. So I take, I'm very aware of that. And I took that same path here where before I even quit my job, I paid off my house, made sure I had literally no debt, paid off student loans, the whole nine yards. And then I felt comfortable kind of taking that leap. And yeah, that was 5 years ago and kind of been going through it since then. So I think being self-aware in anything you do is super important. I just didn't want the additional stress of, being, some people might like it, but being forced to have this thing be super successful to, put food on the table and stuff like that. So yeah, it's been fun. I would say that mental battle of making that leap was probably the most challenge.
What are some of the decisions as a new podcast producer, podcast production agency owner that you made that helped you think long-term and the right decision instead of a short-term cash decision?
I would say probably one of the big things is hiring, because this is also like anyone that's in that kind of freelancer mode where they're working with someone, starting to help people. They price their services according to them doing everything, right? They are the overhead, and essentially that means the overhead is nothing. So they can try to charge super low amounts. And I think that's a huge mistake and will force you to forever be a freelancer and never be able to actually create a business out of it that you can remove yourself to some extent. Maybe you don't want to remove yourself fully, but to some extent. And so I think one of the most important things people can do early on when they're starting their business is, one, just do everything you can to land the first clients that you can help with your creative skills. And then the second thing is, once you actually have proved to yourself that you can actually get some clients and actually help people get results, you need to be pricing your services according to hiring help. So you need, even if you're not hiring anyone to help you at the time, you need to be factoring that stuff in and building out your pricing as if someone was already helping you. Now, in the short term, that's going to mean you have hella good profit margins. In the long term, it's going to ensure that you don't have paper thin or razor thin profit margins. So it's going to ensure you have a healthy business that you can grow into as, one, you start adding in more like creative help. So the actual doers that are, whatever you might be doing in your service to creators, but it also means that you can add in what I call like non-revenue generating activities, which would be like the more like operational help to things. So super important to think about that upfront. And it's super scary to people because they see how much it means they need to be charging.
Yeah. Right?
Usually it means they need to double or triple their prices from what they're charging right now. And so some of the people that we're helping with this process right now, they go through this exercise and they're like, holy crap, I need to 3X my pricing if I need to hire someone. I'm like, well, yeah, you're like running around like a madman right now trying to service, you know, 4 different creative clients that you're, whether it's like content production, podcasting, whatever it might be. And now they realize they need help. And they've got these clients that they're working with that they literally cannot afford to hire help for, because then they will either not be making money or be losing money on the fulfillment of those services. So just that little bit of forethought can be scary because you got to charge more. But that's why I said in the beginning, just do whatever you can to get some clients in the door with a little bit of profit margin. You want it to be like a no-brainer for them to work with you, and then quickly transition to setting yourself up to have a sustainable business.
So you're saying that in addition to running your agency, you also consult with other podcast producers that are trying to start their own agency. Is that correct?
Yeah, for sure. Yep. So I drink my own Kool-Aid. And so our agency is running quite well right now. I think it works out to be like 27 hours a week on that. So pretty much Monday through Thursday, like 8 to 3 is what I work on the agency. And then I don't work on the agency on Fridays, which happens to be the day we're recording this right now. So that I had some free time, quote unquote, because I'm not the kind of person that can just like sit here and like watch a movie all day or something like that.
Yeah.
I have to fill that time with something that makes me feel productive. To be honest, like how it all came to be, I was having monthly calls with like 3 other people in the kind of content agency space. They had different types of agencies, not just podcast stuff. And it was just me answering questions all day. And it was cool because I like they're actual people that I'm friends with. But it was just like it wasn't a completely one way thing where like I was just giving all the value and not getting anything, but it was like a 95-5 type of thing. And I was like, man, like all these people like highly look up to me, especially for like systems and operations and stuff like that. So I decided to just see if other people wanted help, launched a couple YouTube videos. Again, if we can talk about content funnels. Another thing we do, so I had some imposter syndrome. So I'll connect all these dots. I had some imposter syndrome where one of the things we do in our agency was we help people bridge the gap between content and their offers, the things they're selling in their business. And we call that content funnels. And we've done it a lot. We've had people had crazy results, made millions of dollars. But I couldn't say I'd done it in a big way, at least.
Right.
So I had this little bit of imposter syndrome. So with this project, I thought that why don't I just, in this scenario, drink my own Kool-Aid from the agency side of things and work on creating content, organic content that drives leads to the business. So launched a few YouTube videos around this topic, drove at this point, like, well, if we look at just the first month, I drove like 220 something people into a group on a platform called School, provided value to those people through weekly Q&A calls that I would do on Fridays. I actually have one of those today right after this interview. And then after the, providing value through those weekly free Q&A calls, because that group's free to join, I then offered those people, here's how I think I can help you. And so I limited it to 8 people, filled all 8 slots up. And I think 3 of those people are podcast agency owners. One guy has a YouTube thumbnail. Actually, 2 guys have like YouTube thumbnail design agencies. 2 of the people have like video strategy agencies, like YouTube strategy agencies. So long story short, we help them systematize and most importantly, like figure out how to actually get customers. So they're not just freelancers looking for one-off gigs here and there. So
we definitely need to hire you to come back in. So I didn't introduce at the beginning. I didn't tell you one really important thing about my relationship with Ryan. You guys have heard my story of how I started my podcast years ago and published every day for a year. But Ryan was actually my coach. Ryan actually helped me through that process. And maybe we could even talk about some of the things I messed up that you kept advising me about. Some of them it took me a while to get right. One of the big things that he really pushed me on is don't read notes, right? Don't read anything. I remember at the beginning, I just didn't have confidence in myself to talk without the notes. And one of the big things I gained about doing a show every day for a year is I can get up and talk and do an episode with no notes, no problem now. But at the beginning, I couldn't. And every time Ryan talked to me, he's like, you can't read. You go look at the notes, you know, look at it and then look up at the camera and say it in your own words, but don't read it.
Yeah.
And you want to talk a little bit more about why that's so important?
It's not important if you're just doing an audio podcast. I mean, you could argue that it's even important there, even though people can't see you, just because you tend to have a non-natural speech pattern when you're reading something versus just talking. There's some plus sides to that. I say a lot when I talk. I say less when I'm reading something. So there's some trade-offs there. But on the video side, it just creates a very unnatural interaction with the person on the screen when they're looking down and off to the side the whole time. So it's a very similar reason to I use a teleprompter, like I'm using a teleprompter right now. So it can seem like I'm looking at you when I'm having the conversation, not like off to the screen or down at this laptop. Yeah. Just creates a better overall experience when you can have that eye contact, especially like you want to build trust with your audience. And if you were sitting in front of someone, it would be like if you are sitting having coffee with someone, it would be pretty suspect if it was the first time you were meeting that person and they never gave you eye contact. They just looked past you the whole time like this, you know? So like we as humans, we enjoy and we get some type of like satisfaction of when people look at us. I think that's one of the main points.
You remember any of the other advice you gave me, some of the other things I was doing wrong? I know you consult lots of people, so you probably don't remember.
Yeah, so not particularly, but I can guarantee I can hit them just because I do this all day, every day. And it's usually the same things over and over and over again that I see. A big one is if you have a product or service to sell, and we'll see if you're doing this, Nathan, I might be putting you on blast right here. Maybe not. If you have a product or service to offer your audience on the back end of your content, which many creators do, it's how many creators afford to be creators. So there's no shame in selling something to your audience. Most of the times you should be. But a lot of times people will do a podcast and they'll make it an interview-based podcast. One, because it's easier than sitting there figuring out like what they want to talk about each and every day. Maybe they're not comfortable. They don't have the confidence to sit down in front of the camera and talk about something. But the analogy I use is if you only have an interview-based show, assuming you have a product or service you would like to introduce your audience to, think about your podcast like a stage. You only are letting other people take your stage and you're never getting up on stage to talk to your audience and build trust with your audience. So how would they ever trust you? Because the prerequisite to someone buying something from you is trust.
Yep.
Now there that a lot is wrapped up within that, like under the umbrella of trust. But at the end of the day, no one will ever buy something for you if they don't trust you. Or even if it's a faceless brand, like some random website or something, right? The copy on the page is the stuff that builds trust, that how it looks, how it's presented. Does it seem professional? Like all that is encapsulating, like building trust with the person on the other side. So in this case, as a content creator, like you are the thing that builds the trust. So if I'm the only one, you have a podcast and I'm the only one that ever talks on it and you just chime in every now and then and ask some questions, it's going to be very hard for the creator of that podcast to build enough trust with their audience so that they can then take the next step with them. So that's something I see a lot. We can drill down into that if you want, or we can just go into some others.
Yeah. So the way to resolve that problem is is to add value as well. Be an active part of the conversation. And as the topics come up, you know, participate in adding value. Is that right?
Yeah, for sure. Yep. I would also, in addition to that, highly, highly, highly recommend anyone that has a primarily interview-based podcast, at bare minimum, make it 80-20. You know, so for every three interviews you do, you're doing one piece of solo content.
Interesting.
I think that is a good mix to kind of get your foot in the door with creating content and get yourself outside of your comfort zone and connect on a one-to-one basis with that audience. So I think it's super powerful. But there's tons of other things that people do wrong. Some of, like, if you think about it, assuming a lot of these people are going to be podcasters or creators in some regard, I'll get like kind of nerdy and technical since that was kind of more of a high level one. Another thing is people don't focus on retention. So whether it's an audio podcast, a video podcast, or just YouTube content in general, arguably the most important metric that you can be monitoring is retention. So on a podcast, the best place to view that is in Apple Podcast Connect. It's really the best place to get data on retention. And you can look at what percentage of your total consumption is from Apple. Let's say it's 60%. You can look at that and you can kind of extrapolate it and see if it'll be a good representation to your overall content. And the other thing on YouTube, so average view duration, as it's called on YouTube, people do things that aren't in line with retention. And retention is one of the main things that the algorithm looks at to say, do we want to show it to more people? Because if you look at it from YouTube's perspective, they have kind of two objectives. One objective is to make sure everyone on the platform is having a great experience. They judge a great experience by how long do they stay on this video. If they stay on the video for a long time, that means that that video is good and that user is having a good experience on their platform. Now, their other objective is ads. Well, they can only show ads if you stay on the video long enough to get to an ad slot.
Right.
So retention, whether it be audio or video, is a huge, huge piece of this. So some of the things that people do they're like trying to create content with one arm behind their back is, especially in podcasting, is they have that, the long, drawn-out intros. So they'll have, like, for example, on YouTube, we don't have anything over 2 to 3 seconds from like a transition. So however you open your episode, like we do a lot of times, like a teaser in the beginning and then a transition and then the actual episode, like that little transition piece is no longer than 2 to 3 seconds. A lot of times we're seeing that be like 20, 30 seconds long, kills retention. On the audio side, very similar. People will have like a 60-second intro for their podcast and we make those no longer than 20 seconds. So just try to keep it as tight as possible, maximum 20 seconds, knowing that everything you do in content should be viewed through the lens of, does this help or hurt my retention on my content? Because retention is all that matters. So just use that as a lens to make conscious decisions about what you should do with your content, whether it be format, structure, editing, whatever it might be.
Can you give us an example of what we should do in that super short intro?
Let's look at both sides of the coin. So on YouTube, it's usually just, if it's a podcast, we just take the logo, not like the whole cover art, but just like the logo, and we just do a quick animation on that, right? So it's literally, it's in and it's out, some type of just brand. It's really just a transition. It's less about the overall brand. On the audio side of things, it really depends on the nature of the podcast, but essentially what you want to do is in a very quick amount of time, tell people what they're going to get out of your content. They essentially need to understand, is this for me or not? And the reason that you don't want this to be long is because after people identify that this is for them, every returning person doesn't need that. So you're just inundating them with something that they don't need. Now, some people like, oh, but I have a podcast that I listen to and I love the intro and I sing along to it every time. Like, great. But that's the exception to the rule, all right? Not everybody wants to sing along to your intros. They clicked play because they thought their topic was interesting, not because they wanted to hear your jingle. So short and sweet, let people know that they're in the right place. That's the like highest level way that I can describe it. That would encapsulate all the different possible scenarios based on niche type of show format, et cetera.
Yeah. Okay, let's jump over here to creating content funnels. That's the one specific thing that you wanted to teach our audience today.
Yeah.
Can you go through and first explain to us what content funnels are, and then maybe go through and teach us step by step what are the most important things our audience needs to know to create effective content funnels?
As creators, it is time, effort, energy, and money to create content. There's no way around it. It takes all those things to put out really good content. And for a lot of people, what that means is they have built themselves a very expensive hobby. And no one likes expensive hobbies, or at least I don't. If I have a hobby, I want it to either just be joyous and cheap, or I want it to be something that makes me a lot of money. So in this case, we want to make sure that we don't just have an expensive hobby and we have something that is worth our time, effort, energy that we're putting into it. So to do that, you have to have something to generate money. So a lot of people, the first thing that comes to their mind is, okay, I'll start a podcast and I'll just get sponsors. I'll make money through sponsors. And what they don't realize is to make any meaningful money with sponsors, you have to you have to have a lot of downloads on your podcast if we're talking about a podcast. So just to give you an idea, we can just use like an average CPM, meaning cost per 1,000 downloads or listeners in this scenario. We can use that for an example. So I'm just pulling up calculator right here. So if you get 10,000 downloads, I think I did that right, it'd be like $400 for your podcast. I think less than that. I think maybe like $40. I think I did the math wrong. But either way, it's not a lot of money. I suck at public math. I should not even try to do that exercise on the fly. So you can do the math. If you multiply however many downloads you're getting by 23, and that'll give you an idea about how much you could be making on a monthly basis. What a lot of people will realize, because I think it was like $40, not $400, they won't be making a lot of money. Most podcasters are getting a couple hundred downloads, maybe a couple thousand, and they're going to be making pennies. And on the flip side of that, they now have to introduce their audience to products they probably don't love and they probably don't want to be promoting. And so just in general, I think for the average podcaster, sponsors are a horrible route to go. Unless you're getting like 500,000 downloads plus a month, you're going to make hell a lot more money with your own products or services on the back end than you are with sponsors. So just want to address that, because that's the first thing, that's the first place people's mind goes to when they think about like, I'm going to create a podcast and I'm going to make money. I'm going to get sponsors. Most time, horrible idea. Now, if you contrast that with having your own product or service, and so that could be like we have an agency, could be you have like some type of info product, meaning like a course or something, could be you do like some type of consulting, could be a lot of different things. We need to try to bridge the gap to that versus telling somebody to go to some other company and buy their thing. Another mistake before I go too deep in that, a lot of times people will get a sponsor, not making a lot of money, while they're also trying to push their own thing. So a little lesson in marketing is you never drive someone to a page that you're selling something on and give them two options for two different things, right? Do you want this or do you want this? Because then they think it's not just a, do I want to buy this thing? It's, do I want to buy this? And of the two options, which one of those do I want to buy? So then they start having to make all these decisions and a confused buyer buys nothing, right? So same thing here. Like you don't want to be telling people to go buy this sponsored product. Oh, and by the way, please buy my thing as well. It's just going to leave them making no action at all. So if we transition over to if you have your own products or service, like just to like get no like pie in the sky stuff, just to get like very kind of technical and in the weeds here, I'll just give you a couple like best practices that you can do. So first, let's look at the audio podcast. Now on an audio podcast, if I have to pick between audio podcast and video podcast in terms of what is going to give you the best ability to make the most money, it's video podcasts by like 50x. You're going to have way more conversions on YouTube than you are on audio podcasts. Like if anybody shows me different, I will be highly, highly surprised and retire from the industry. So because on the audio podcast, you have two things as a potential call to action to get people to go somewhere. You can verbally tell them, go to this URL, buy this widget, or you can tell them to go to the show notes. Now, if we listen to podcasts, you've heard people a million times say, hey, there's a link in the show notes. How many times have you gone to the show notes?
Yeah, almost never.
Very, very few times. Why is that? Because they're damn hard to find. So depending on the app you use, it is so difficult to find the show notes. I did an exercise on Spotify. I don't remember the exact number, but I think it was something like, it took like 6 or 7 clicks from once you had pressed play on an episode to get to where the show notes were. On Apple Podcasts, it's also very unintuitive to how you actually get to the show notes.
Plus, a lot of times when you're listening to an episode, it's because you're multitasking, you're driving, you're exercising, right? You're not in a spot you can find the show notes and read the show notes. You're using an audio podcast because you're doing something else while you're doing it. That's the big reason a lot of people do audio in the first place. So
yeah,
it doesn't really
absolutely.
lend to
and so very very bad for conversion, right? So what is it good for then? Why do people do podcasts? Why have I made a living helping people do podcasts that have businesses? Well, it is an amazing tool for, what did we say we need to ultimately get someone to purchase something from us? Trust. And in my opinion, there's nothing better for building trust than long form audio content. So it is fantastic for building trust, horrible for audience acquisition. So for discoverability, for people finding you, very, very bad for that. Doesn't work on the audio side. The platforms just aren't set up in that manner. So to hit on your point there, right? People are driving, stuff like that, to kind of wrap up the audio side of things. When people are driving, if you want them to do something, the URL needs to be super memorable, super easy. Ideally, no this domain.com/blah, blah, blah. We just want like quick and easy domain to remember. Now, it doesn't have to be super short, right? It could be actually like almost like a short little statement in the URL, like your company's called PodUp, right, Nathan?
Yes.
Yeah. So maybe it's like instead of just like podup.com, maybe that's like your like general domain. Maybe it's like usepodup.com or getpodup.com. Like, so you can like add some like words to that, some like prefix words to one, make it unique, because that's another thing as well. Attribution from content is very difficult, especially audio content, because when you give that verbal call to action, when they go to that URL, it's a mystery where they came from. So if you have a business that's doing decent transaction volume and you want to know what traffic sources are leading to the most purchases for you, now audio podcast content just becomes a mystery. It becomes opaque. You have no idea if it's working or not. So what we do and what we recommend is, if you have some type of funnel or some type of page, landing page, you essentially duplicate that or create a version of that that is unique to the audio content. Now, it has a unique URL or some type. What that does, it gives you attribution.
You can
because
track
you know,
it.
I'm not saying go to getpodup.com anywhere else but the audio content. Thus, if somebody opts in or buy something from this funnel, this page, they had to come from the audio podcast. So it gives you a way to tell in a very kind of simple, easy to do way without any fancy tools or anything, is this working or not? Depending on the platforms that the person's using, it's usually pretty easy to execute on as well. Now, on the flip side of that, if we look at YouTube, on YouTube, I said your conversions are going to be like 50x. Well, why is that? Well, one of the big ones is when you're watching a YouTube video on desktop in particular, right below the video, you have your description section, i.e. like show notes, if we're just talking about podcasting stuff, right? That's where your show notes version on YouTube is going to live. And the cool thing about YouTube is the first 3 lines below the video in that description section are readable without clicking like see more to expand it. So what does that mean? That means that you can have your call to action right? The copy plus the URL right below the video. And someone can see that as the next step you want them to take without doing anything else other than watching the video. They can be watching the video and see that option to take the next step right below the video. So super, super powerful that you can just watch the content, click the video, go to the next step. So if you're providing a lot of value, if they love what you're doing or what you're talking about, it's just very natural for them to take the next step. I mean, that's how this business that we just launched where for the content agency stuff, that's how we got those 200 and something people into that group. That's how we sold the offer to the first 8 people. So it worked fantastic. And just that, I think it was 4 YouTube videos to this group, providing value in that group, that made like 30K just from like 8 people and 4 videos. So that is what a content funnel does, right? You build trust, you have to have a mechanism for someone to take the next step, and then you have to actually have a good product or service on the back end that provides value. And 100% you can sell stuff to them. To give you an idea of how powerful trust building on YouTube is, especially when you're doing solo content, I'll tell you about, so like I said, we sold it to 8 people just to kind of, one, validate the idea, right? You never want to spend, at least if you're bootstrapping something, you never want to spend, a year or two building a business and then validate the business after you spend a year or two building it. Very, very bad idea, right?
Yeah.
To find out that nobody wants what you have to sell. So I wanted to see, would someone buy this thing? And then if yes, I'll go build it. So one of the guys that bought it, he bought it for $3,600, so not cheap. He had built so much trust how the funnel, this content funnel worked. They watched the YouTube video. They went into an opt-in page, which was for a free training that I was offering. They watched the training, which was an hour and 14 minutes of high, high value content. And then they had an option to book a call. So this guy booked a call. He got into the group. I had already made the post in the group about the offer. He bought the offer before the sales call. So he had built so much trust just from the YouTube content that he was comfortable spending $3,600 with someone that he had never talked to before. So that's just like a quick story from me that I can give. I could give a lot of anecdotal stuff from clients that have made millions, but just from like firsthand, like literally within the past 30 days, something that happened, like that's a real example of the power of trust building on content and how you can create a content funnel out of that and actually create a meaningful amount of money.
Yeah, that's a great example. I remember being at a Funnel Hacking Live conference once with Russell Brunson, and he was teaching a similar concept. And he said, you know, how many of you, if I didn't tell you what the product was, but I told you I had a new product, it was the most amazing product, and it was cost $50,000, how many of you would go to the back door of the room and buy it just based upon the trust that you have in me? And, you know, probably half of the room raised their hand and said yes. And how amazing is it to have that kind of trust that they buy without even knowing what the product is? So I agree with you. And that's one of the big benefits of having a show as well. Because you're giving so much value, you have an opportunity to build that trust in a way that is otherwise not possible. How many businesses today, they get a lead and they immediately go for the sale, right? Instead of providing value first.
Yeah, that's why
first.
If you follow the framework that I built out, the most important piece of that whole funnel is that free training. It's not some rinky-dink, something you just threw together. It's something it was like 160 slides long. I gave away, like someone could literally use that training and truly, like the opt-in page wasn't a lie. Like that training can help you start your own content agency and make 6 figures, guarantee it. But if you want additional help and support, I can also help you do that and get more in depth on those things that I could only get a little bit surface level in the training, but didn't hold anything back in the training. And actually learned that process from one of our clients. They'll do about 10 million a year just off of YouTube, just organic YouTube content to a $1,500 course. So you can do the math, 10 million divided by 1,500, see how many that they're selling from YouTube. I'll go to dinner with this guy, he's here in Austin. They'll be getting 15 to 30 sales a day on $1,500 product from organic YouTube traffic. And so I literally just modeled what they did. They had an opt-in page. They had a training where they gave away a ton of value. Theirs was like an hour and 30 minutes long. And you build so much trust through the free content and then this very in-depth content that the only thing they had to give you, for you from a payment standpoint was their email, right? So it's still the value exchange is vastly flipped, right? So far, you gave them a ton of value and free content. They gave you nothing. Then you give them 10x the value in this training, and all you had to give was the email, right? So the value exchange is still so vastly different that then when you go, hey, I can help you more, and it's $1,500. Now, just by them giving you $1,500, you've became back to a baseline where you're even.
Well, and they even trust you at that point. They know that if they pay you $1,500, that you're going to give them far more value than what they've paid you.
Holy crap. If this is what he's giving away in exchange for just my email, just imagine what kind of value I'm going to get if I give him $1,500 or $800 or $5,000, you know, whatever it is, right? You're just trying to paint that picture that you're the expert, that you can be trusted. And yeah, content's a great way to do that.
Well, thank you for the value that you provided today, Ryan. If our audience enjoyed this episode like I did, and they want to learn more about your products and services, what are the best ways for them to do that?
So I could give you a URL, but I'm going to get you into my content funnel so that you can experience it. So just look me up on YouTube, Ryan Helms, last name H-E-L-M-S. You'll find me. You'll be able to see some of the content. And if you want to explore more, then you'll be able to see what an actual content funnel looks like.
Thank you very much. And thank you for joining us today. Here are my key takeaways from this episode. Number one, becoming a podcast host allows you to build relationships and credibility with high-profile guests, which can help you leapfrog to the top of your industry. Number two, writing a book in your niche can help establish your authority and open doors, like getting translated for foreign markets hungry for that knowledge. Number three, educating, inspiring, and entertaining are three ways to build an engaged audience. A book and podcast can tick those boxes. Number four, sponsor a niche podcast series to gain targeted brand exposure, leads through host interactions and affiliate marketing opportunities. Number five, create exclusive, high-value content that listeners will pay for access to via a membership model. Number six, join or create a podcast network to cross-promote shows, combine advertiser deals, and collectively improve rankings. Number seven, provide massive value first without expecting anything in return. The good karma pays off down the road. And finally, number eight, consistent self-promotion across platforms like YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram drives podcast traffic and monetization. If you're looking for a great all-in-one podcasting platform with more than 35 integrated modules, you can get a free trial at podup.com. Thank you for joining us for this episode. I wish you success as you seek to improve your influence and increase your monetization.